Hi, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. It is a Pets and Vet show today. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also visit us via Twitter at WAMC Vox Pop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can go to our website, WAMC.org, find the Vox Pop section. It's WAMC.org/Vox Pop. There's a spot to comment there, but you can call. We'd love that. Or even email us, voxpop@WAMC.org. The number to call, once again, 1-800-348-2551. We are joined today by our friend, Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin, a graduate of Cornell University who joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. She is a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Is that like a hurricane? What's the category? What is that?
Category 1 is small animals only.
Okay.
The other category is, I believe, Category 2 includes large animals.
Okay, so if I brought my baboon to you, that would not be something you can do. Okay, so what's new?
What's new? Well, spring has sprung. I had my first quill case yesterday.
What's that?
Oh, porcupine quill.
In this area?
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen a porcupine in this area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this one came from, you know, Westerlo, Rensselaer area. But, we get several quill cases every year.
And they just go out at night or you see them in the day?
Mostly at night.
Yeah.
Mostly at night. So, you know, dusk and dawn.
If you see, for instance, a possum in the day, you should be worried.
Well, possums are rabies carriers, so you do have to be somewhat careful. But possums can be out in the day.
Yeah.
And possums generally look scary. They will show you their big, nasty teeth. But they're really pretty darn tame and very stupid.
Yeah, they don't seem all that bright. But yeah. Porcupines, on the other hand, they don't carry rabies?
Any mammal can carry rabies.
Mm-hmm.
And porcupines certainly can. Certain animals are much more known for it. Raccoons, bats, foxes, but any mammal, it's just that, you know, certain mammals tend to get killed off by whatever rabid animal attacked them. So,
porcupines, now you say quill case, that means the porcupines eject quills? How does this work?
They don't necessarily eject them. It's just the dogs tend to, you know, see them and go, oh, that looks like a fun thing. Let me go play with it. And as soon as you touch a porcupine, the quills will come out.
And there's no poison.
No.
They just hurt.
And they stick in and they can be hard to get out.
Wow, I've already learned something. Let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin is our guest. Karen in Rensselaer, you're up first.
Hi, Ray, and hi, Dr. O'Loughlin.
Hello.
I have a cat who's at least 15. I adopted her from a shelter when she was an adult, so I'm not entirely sure of her age. I took her for her yearly at the vet, and she had her, you know, blood work, and they think that she's in the very beginning stages of renal failure.
Oh, that's too bad.
And then it is too bad. And the other thing is she has really terrible breath. And so the vet looked at her teeth, you know, as best as he could inside, you know, without putting her to sleep to do it. And he suggested that we, you know, do a procedure where he puts her to sleep and he has a look to see if her teeth are rotting out from the inside. So my sort of two-part question is, she's really old. She seems to be having a good life. You know, I'm worried about losing her while she's sedated. And the other piece is he suggests as she moves further into renal failure that I start giving her IVs at home, which once a week, which I don't think would be great for her quality of life. So I'm just kind of want a second opinion, what you think. And I trust my vet and love my vet, but.
Okay, so a couple of questions. When you said that they tested the cat and the cat was showing some signs of renal failure, I take it the blood values were abnormal?
Yes.
And they must have been only mildly abnormal?
Very mild. Yep, okay. He said he thinks it's beginning.
Okay. So the problem with cats in renal failure, they can live with renal failure for a long time. I personally had a cat I diagnosed in renal failure at the age of 6, and he died at 19 and a half.
Wow.
So just because the blood values are abnormal doesn't mean your cat's on death's doorstep. Now, that said, it does mean that your cat is down to the last 25% functional kidney. The good news is you don't need very much kidneys to keep going. So the other part of the question, of course, are the teeth. Now, having unhealthy teeth is not good for the cat, and it's not good for the kidneys. So you you kind of get in a catch-22. You want to do something about the teeth, but you don't want to harm the kidneys. The good news is with our current anesthetics and with the, you know, you can give the cat fluids while they're under anesthesia. Unless a cat's in, you know, advanced renal failure, I probably would be recommending having the teeth done as well. I think you're likely to get longer, good quality life if the cat has a, you know, a healthy mouth that doesn't hurt, so they keep eating. And then doing the fluids at home, what he's talking about doing is subcutaneous fluids or fluids under the skin. And again, that can really keep some cats going when they get to the point where they're not eating as well because their kidney values are getting worse. And a lot of cats tolerate it very well. And just, you know, it takes 5 minutes, once or twice a week, and you can actually extend their life pretty well that way.
How old is the cat?
She's 15 at least.
Right. Which, you know, in my mind, a 15-year-old cat, I always kind of jokingly say they have their Social Security, but they haven't. You know, they got their AARP card, but they're not quite, you know, reaching Social Security age. You know, cats are living a lot longer these days. So
if she, I'm so sorry, one more follow-up. If she, as she dies of renal failure, depending on, you know, say she doesn't tolerate having the, she doesn't tolerate a heck of a lot.
Right.
If she doesn't tolerate having fluids at home, which I'm definitely want to try, is that death peaceful the way it is for humans? Do they just kind of go to sleep?
No. In my mind, in kidney failure, they generally, as the toxins build up and they can't get rid of them, they start to feel chronically nauseous. So eventually their appetite tails off. And when cats stop eating, in my mind, it's time to let them go.
To euthanize her?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I don't let them die a natural death from kidney failure because it's not pretty.
Okay.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. Okay. Thanks so much for your expertise.
Okay. No problem.
Thanks, Karen. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Don in South Bethlehem. Don, you're up.
John.
John, I'm sorry, John, you're on.
Yep, that's okay. A couple of quick things. One of them, a cat that I take him, I try and take him for a walk every day, or just let him walk with me, and he just eats enormous amounts of grass. He just loves it. He sniffs out like ryegrass, and he, you know, with a little sprouty tops on him, and I try and I'm always watching what he eats to make sure he doesn't eat anything that would be harmful. But, you know, he just eats enormous amounts of grass. He just loves it. I can't believe, I never saw a cat do that before.
Wow.
Does it make him get sick at all? Or
never, never.
Good.
He never throws up. He just enjoys it.
Yep.
You know, if he gets into catnip, he'll eat some of that. He just goes nuts. But he just loves, you know, I got to be careful. He'll eat, you know, he sniffs out the ryegrass. That's what he likes best, even when it's dry in the winter. He just, I don't know, he's got a great nose.
Yeah. Well, you know, cats are carnivores, pretty much obligate carnivores, but they do like to have some grass every now and then. That's why they sell little things of grass in the pet stores.
Well, like a salad.
I'm telling you, every day a lot.
He
just eats and eats. And then the other quick one, he does have, he has one eye, and half of it is like scar tissue, the upper part. He was born with herpes, or was affected by it. And I just was wondering, is that, you know, he's 3 years old now, and I'm just wondering if that's something that is kind of stable in itself in terms of his cornea there, or it could you know, increase the, you know, cover more of the surface area. I just always worried about that, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
If it's just a scar at this point, it just sort of looks white. That may just be something he's going to have to live with. Now, unfortunately, you know, any cats that are affected by the herpes virus, which is an upper respiratory virus, herpes is a lifelong infection. So it's always in their system, and it can pop up at any time. So certainly, but herpes ulcers are pretty painful. So you'll know if it activates because he'll be squinting and holding that eye shut. As long as he's holding the eye open, it probably is just an old scar.
And we do keep him on L-lysine every
day.
Oh,
good.
Twice a day he gets that. So.
Yep, that
but
helps.
If there are other things that, you know, could be helpful or other things to watch for, it would be good to know.
So, no, just...
Let me get off the line. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say stress. You know, stress tends to bring out the herpes virus. So as long as he's got a nice, happy life and he's well-fed, you know.
Yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
John, thank you. So there are no antivirals that would take care of that?
There are antivirals that you can use in the eyes when they're having an active infection. But when it's, you know, in between, there's nothing to stop it. He is giving lysine, L-lysine, which is an amino acid, which seems to have some effect on helping cats to fight off herpes. But and so it does, certainly doesn't hurt to give that.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Cary O'Loughlin today. More of your calls on Pets and Vets coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Taft Farms, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Growers of heirloom vegetables for the home garden, and featuring an asparagus festival May 31st. Vendor tastings, children's activities, and more, taftfarms.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953, sheehyopticians.com. Albany Pro Musica, presenting Pops Goes the Chorus, a cabaret-style concert with show tunes and popular songs June 6th and 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shaker Meeting House, albanypromusica.org. And Block Island Tourism, Block Island, Rhode Island, offering accommodations, entertainment, white sand beaches, bicycling, dining, shopping, history, nature, and more, blockislandinfo.com.
Well, you know, the fun drive starts on Monday. This coming Monday at 6 a.m., Alan plunks himself down in the old chair, and here we go again. Well, guess what? We're going to shorten the drive this time around. We have the lockbox in operation at our website, wamc.org. So, the concept is pretty simple. Last month or so, we've been feeding the lockbox. Get that number up as much as we can. Right now, we're at $277,000 and change raised. If we can hit the $325,000 mark by Monday morning at 6. A person that we call Mr. Big lives in Connecticut and is an anonymous donor, a quite real person, will throw in $25,000 more. That would put us at $350,000 to start the fund drive on Monday. That's 2-3 days off the drive, and then we're back to regular programming. So if you're thinking about making a pledge in our drive, maybe make half online now. Help feed the lockbox. We'll reach that goal. WAMC.org. And you can see our progress, too. There's a little thermometer there. It's very clever. All right, back to the phones we go. It's Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Joined by Dr. Cary O'Loughlin today on this Pets and Vets edition. Lynn in Shelburne, you're up.
Yes, hello, Dr. McLaughlin.
O'Loughlin.
O'Loughlin.
Ray, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got, now that we're on for a few minutes, I've got a couple calls. But, I'm sorry. But my first call was about... I've got a female, there's a balding problem in her tummy, and she's like 13 years old now, and I was too embarrassed to bring her to the vet for a long time, and then when I did, they gave her, you know,
what?
You know, what? Sorry. They gave her cortisone.
Cortisone?
Yeah. And gave her some pills, and it started to get back to normal, and they told me to give her some other food. And they said that it might be an allergy, and the guy is really good. And, yeah, it probably is an allergy. But we tried different foods for several months. They weren't working. So finally my friends, my partner here says, how about cat litter? And I said, oh, that's a really good idea. I think it might be getting better now, but is that a possibility, cat litter?
So you're worried the cat might be allergic to the litter?
Yes.
Yeah. It's possible. Cats, you know, cats and dogs can be allergic to anything. And in cats, I assume that besides being bald underneath, she also had some red spots on her skin
at some
point.
Raw.
Yeah. And so, you know, allergies can be indoor allergies, outdoor allergies. You know, can be allergic to tree pollen, grass pollen. It can be food.
It's mostly her rear end, though.
Yep. Yep. And in cats, for some reason, they tend to like to lick their belly, over-lick their belly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's a really common spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I would never say never about anything, you know. So certainly if you want to try a different cat litter and see if that makes a difference. If it's something that's non-seasonal, in other words, it doesn't seem to make a difference whether it's spring or fall or summer,
yeah.
It's less likely to be some outdoor plant-like allergy.
Hmm. It's get better in the winter, and then it's starting to get better now. It started trail off toward the end of winter, and it was not doing so good, and now it seems to be getting better again with the new shedding season.
Right, right. So, you know, if certainly trying a different litter is not a bad idea. And I had a dog once that was allergic to the tap water in the house. So,
really?
Oh my goodness.
You know, it can be anything.
Should you go to an allergist, a pet allergist?
They can do allergy testing. And, you know, you can do blood tests for allergies, and that'll tell you if it's indoor house allergies. It won't necessarily test for cat litter, but they do test for a lot of other things in the house.
I'm sorry, I can't do that on a fixed income.
Yeah.
But one more, or two more maybe?
One anyway.
I've got a cat here that had joined us at an early age, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. But he's always kind of sickly. He said, Jonas, again. He's 13 years old, too, and he's had Jonas again sometime in the last 5 years, but now he's okay. What do you see in that?
Well, jaundice is a sign that their liver is not happy. Well, it can be two things. It can be the liver's not happy, or it can be that they're having a problem with their red blood cells.
Hmm.
My guess, if he's done this a couple of times, it's probably his liver. And he's a cat who is prone to getting something called cholangiohepatitis, which is inflammation of the liver.
Mm.
And, you know, that is something that can strike cats, you know, multiple times in their life.
Oh, man.
You know, and it's a good thing that he's gotten over it, because jaundice is never a good sign in a cat.
That's what they said.
Yeah, that's usually a sign they're pretty ill. So,
Lynn, thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Maria in Olive Bridge. Maria.
Hi. Yes. I had four Siberian Huskies who were litter mates, and one of them has now passed on. They're a little over 12. They're like 12 and a half years old. And the one that passed away had a lot of lipomas. It was a female. And the other three are males. And one of the other three also has lipomas.
What are lipomas?
They're fatty tumors.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had gone on the internet briefly and looked into them, thinking that maybe diet would help. You know, fatty tumors, fat, maybe that wasn't a good thing. Now, she was not overweight. The boy who now has a lot of lipomas is a bit overweight and has been for quite a while, even though I tried to get his weight down, and I did stop him from gaining and lost some. But anyway, I looked it up in the internet and or somewhere, maybe one of my books, and it said that a diet higher in carbohydrates contributes. Some people think that it contributes to lipomas. So I brought that up with my vet, and she said she never heard of that. So what I'm wondering about is which of the two foods that I have that I'm giving them should I be giving him? One of them is Eukanuba. It's 28-18, 28 protein, 18 fat. And that's the one that I've had 7 Siberians in 25 years, and I've always had them that diet mostly, and they've done very well on it. But since the one boy had been gaining weight, I started to give him a diet that's for dogs that are 7 years and older, and it's 27 protein and 12 fat, which means there are probably more carbohydrates in there to compensate for the absence of the fat and protein.
Right.
So what's your opinion on this? I mean, you think fatty tumors can be caused by fat, and the 18% fat is higher.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they said carbs.
Yeah, Maria, I don't think diet really has anything to do with lipomas. I think it's really a genetic issue. We don't really know what causes tumors, period.
Mm-hmm.
But, lipomas are just, for some reason, a bunch of fat that decided to accumulate in one spot. I've seen very skinny dogs have lipomas. I've seen very fat dogs have lipomas.
Uh-huh.
I think it just is an individual dog thing. And they certainly, once a dog gets a lipoma, they often get others, you know, as well. So I think the individual dog is prone to getting them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that worrying too much about the diet is going to make a big difference. Now, that said, they do say that cancer cells in general like carbohydrates. In other words, they use the carbs to help grow. So for a while, the big kick was to give dogs that had cancer a very high protein, low carb diet.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they found that most of those dogs couldn't handle the high protein, low carb diet, and they got really nasty diarrhea. So that kind of went by the by. But my feeling is if you fed that one diet and your pets have done great on it for years, stick with it. You know, don't worry about it. And lipomas, unless they're in a bad spot or they're getting really huge, most animals can live with them and it doesn't bother them one bit.
Right. Okay, well, just a little clarification. I misspoke. I didn't actually believe, nor did I read, that they cause lipomas, but just that they could contribute to them. But I hear what you're saying. And actually, I will give some thought to the cancer thing because it is probable, although we never knew for sure, that the female who had a lot of lipomas had cancer. Because when we did an ultrasound and x-rays near the end of her life, she had masses all over inside as well as outside.
Right, right.
So we didn't know that it was cancer. It might not have been. It might have been just tumors. Do lipomas grow inside?
Occasionally you can get one inside the body, but they're pretty rare, pretty rare.
Okay. And a quick question about the eating grass and dirt.
Yeah.
My dogs like to eat grass and dirt, and we discourage them. Is that a bad thing or a good thing?
I think again, some dogs just love the taste of grass, especially in the spring
when
it's nice and fresh. And, some dogs like to eat dirt and rocks and everything. Not always a great thing, the dirt and the rocks. We actually just had a young puppy in that ate two rocks and had to go to surgery.
Ouch.
So
Yeah. No, they don't eat rocks. They're smarter than that. But,
but apparently not that much.
Okay.
Maria, thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. Really? Dirt?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people, swear that they're missing something in their diet. I think some dogs just like the taste of things and they'll put anything in their mouth.
Sure. They like dirt. Let's go to Lois and Latham. Hi, Lois. You're on.
Hi, Dr. I'm sorry.
Dr. O works just fine.
Dr. O.
I have a 6-month-old Newfoundland puppy, and I'm feeding her a raw diet. I've read a lot about it, and it seemed like something that I like to do, and it's going very well. She really enjoys it. But I was wondering if you are aware of any, negative aspects. All the books I read, they're just highly positive. And I was just wondering if there are any pitfalls that you might be aware of that I should look out for, or maybe some information on supplementation. Any thoughts on that?
Okay, so for raw diet, are you buying a packaged raw diet or are you making it yourself?
Well, I'm buying through, my breeder works with Almost Pride, so I buy bulk raw meaty bones and mix. Like they have these chicken mixed with organ meat and ground bones. So I kind of rotate. I give her, some raw meaty bones and then I, alternate with some of that mix so that she gets some organ meat. And I feed her some tripe too as well here and there. So it's all, it's frozen, but it's you know, bone. It's whole bone. She actually prefers, like, the turkey necks and the chicken frames and things like that.
Right.
So it's predominantly that.
Right. My biggest concern with raw diet or any homemade diet is making sure you're getting the proper mix of you know, protein, fat, and nutrients, especially in a young giant breed dog, because, you know, a lot of the bone growth issues, a lot of it has to do with diet. So you have to be very careful not to go too heavy on the protein with a giant breed dog. So I know they do have some raw diets that come sort of prepackaged, like a sausage that you're just sort of slicing off bits and feeding them.
Right.
I would feel better doing something like that than just sort of throwing some, you know, raw meat together, because you don't want to end up with a giant breed dog that has all sorts of joint issues down the road.
Okay. All right. That's good. And one other quick question. You know, she's very sweet, you know, and I have two teenage boys, and one of them she keeps nipping at, like, whenever he's in the room. And we've been going to obedience classes, and she doesn't do it when we're at class, you know, when my son's with me at class. She's perfectly well-behaved, but when we're at home, she just goes wild on him, and the only thing that works for him is if he, like, grabs her by the scruff of her neck and, you know, forces her into the down position.
Right.
And then, like, stares at her.
Wow.
So but then she starts, like, growling at him, like, not viciously, but kind of, like, protesting.
Right.
I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Like, she doesn't do it with anyone else in the family.
So she obviously sees him more as a litter mate than as a boss. So what I would recommend is that he do things like feed her and make her sit and wait before she gets her food. You know, that he walk her and again make her wait by the door, and that he go out the door first. Things like that. And that all puts him above her in the hierarchy.
Okay.
Right. I'm not a big fan of the, you know, holding the dog down by its neck, and because that is very threatening to them. You know, just making her do a command, sit down, stay until I tell you otherwise, is a much better thing.
Okay. Lois, thank you.
All right. Yeah, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin, and let's go to Dan in Pittsfield. Dan.
Yes, hey, Ray. Thanks so much for taking my call. Hi, doctor. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm okay. I came home on my lunch break 2 days ago. I noticed my dog, she's a Greyhound Great Dane mix. She was favoring one of her hind legs, but yesterday she was favoring it 2 days ago. Yesterday she was able to get down the deck stairs, but not hop up into the car. So, you know, I helped her in the car, helped her out of the car, got her up the stairs, and as of last night, she has not moved from her spot. I came home on lunch to check on her, and she's just lying. She actually urinated on her dog bed. Just, she won't move. I put food and water right next to her, so I didn't know if those symptoms were something that would ring a bell to you. I mean, a vet trip is in my plans. It just happened to be that you were on the radio when I was coming home from lunch.
Yeah, certainly, you know, just being lame could be an injury, it could be a bunch of things. But if she's feeling really lousy like that, I mean, one of the first things that pops into my head is something like Lyme disease.
Okay, that's what I was concerned of. She has free range here, and I live in a wooded area.
Yeah, but either way, it sounds like you should call your vet and get her seen.
Very good. That was an answer to my question. Thank you so much, doctor.
All right.
Way to go, Dan. Thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. Let's get one more in before the next break. Mike in Fort Ann. Mike, you're on.
Hello. I want to see if I should be concerned with one of my cat's eating habits. with regards to fruits and vegetables. It will lick a cantaloupe dry and eat the seeds out of it. Like, it'll lick it until there's nothing left.
Wow.
And also it likes to eat cucumbers and the skins from cucumbers.
Yeah, again, you know, although we're always taught that cats are carnivores at heart, you know, I had one cat that would eat lettuce off the floor if it fell down there.
Yep, it'll eat lettuce too.
Yeah, so, you know, again, nothing too harmful in any of those things for a cat.
Would the sugar be an issue with the cantaloupe?
No, not really. I mean, if the cat was a diabetic, it might be an issue, but just an otherwise, you know, just a healthy cat, I don't see it being a problem.
And that's not something that can lead to diabetes?
No, mainly with cats, it's more obesity than anything. So, you know, as long as he or she is not, you know,
super
extremely
large.
Rotund,
yeah,
I wouldn't worry too much about it.
It's a pretty fit cat. That same cat, is there also a reason why they would like to drink fresh water right out of the tap rather than a bowl? Because he seems to only drink the water out of the bathtub or
yep.
a kitchen faucet.
Yep. No, a lot of cats really prefer running water. And so that's why they've made all those kitty fountains and things like that. We have one cat that pretty much every day gets up on the sink and wants us to turn the sink on.
Amazing.
So she can drink out of it. So that's very common.
Mike, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin is here. It is Pets and Vets. More of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Historic boutique hotel offering romantic Hudson Valley getaways, 11 guest rooms, modern amenities, expanded outdoor deck overlooking the Rondout River, the1850house.com. Careers and Transition LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Ye Old Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York. A Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities, open 7 days a week. yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. The Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting Diego Garcia, Saturday, May 31st at 8 p.m., thelinda.org. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com.
Well, the microphone's on. I was content to listen to Wayne Shorter for a few more minutes, but that's fine. No, Zach, the engineer, yeah, you're running the show. That's fine. That's fine. 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. That means we have to talk. And darn it, that's what we're going to do. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin is here from the Del Mar Animal Hospital. And back to the phones we go. Johanna in Athens, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey there.
I have an 11-month-old Rhodesian Ridgeback, and she licks her feet. She licks and licks and licks her feet. She kind of gnaws at her nails. Is that something like the way a cat cleans themselves? Or?
Probably not if she does it constantly.
Now, a Rhodesian Ridgeback is a dog?
It's a dog.
Okay.
Yeah,
yep.
It's a big dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not constantly, but I see her like maybe once a day, and she'll just like really just, she'll do one foot after another, just like if she's on something, it'll be wet by the time she's
right,
done.
Right, right. The biggest concern is that is a very common sign of allergies.
Uh-huh.
Now, at 11 months old, she's sort of on the borderline of having environmental allergies, because usually they have to get exposed to everything once in their life, and then the next time around they'll react. But dogs can become allergic to their food at any age.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be looking at a food allergy.
Okay.
Especially if, is she discoloring her paws at all by the licking?
Nope, and I've looked at them. I can't see that they're like red, because they're not kind of webs, not really. But, you know, they look fine.
Right. So, you know,
they're licking them.
Right. You know, I would also, you know, make sure you peek in her ears and make sure the ears are okay, because if they're truly allergic and they're licking their paws, a lot of times their ears get red as well.
Oh.
And
yeah, that did happen once, and I had to take her to the vet because she started like really flapping her head.
Yep.
We got some drops and that cleared up and they're fine now, but she's still doing the feet.
Yep. Yep. So I'd be a little worried that she's an allergy dog.
Okay.
So, you know,
food is grain free.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Grain free. The problem with grain free diets is a lot of times it's great if the dog's allergic to the grain in their food,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of dogs are not allergic to the grain. They're allergic to the meat or whatever the mm-hmm. protein source.
Yeah, so, venison and bison.
Right. So in order to truly rule out food allergies, you have to put the dog on an exclusive diet of something they've never eaten before.
Mm-hmm.
So they do make some over-the-counter ones, but what the dermatologists really like is to home cook for the dog for a couple of months.
Oh, it'll take a couple of months before you can rule things out?
Yes.
Okay.
So
dog 75 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unfortunately. But, you know, beans and potatoes for a couple of months.
Beans and potatoes?
Really?
And potatoes.
For a dog?
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Just don't
like
stand behind the dog.
Like regular white potatoes?
Yep. You can do white potatoes or sweet potatoes and just, you know, any kind of, you know, white bean or canola bean or whatever you want to grab.
Oh,
and,
I might try that. And you think, how long you think? Like,
you got to do it for at least 2 months before you know for
okay.
sure. You may know sooner. She may stop licking her paws after, you know, 4 weeks, but... and then you know that there was something in her old diet.
Okay.
But you also have to make sure that everything else that goes in her mouth. So no dog
right,
treats,
no treats.
Bones, no, you know.
Right.
Chewable
and
heartworm
then,
medicine.
I just take a stab at the calories. Like I could look up how many calories.
Yeah, usually they say just basically the same cup wise that you were feeding.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'll try that.
Wouldn't it be easier just to take the dog and have the allergy test?
You can't really allergy test for food.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Johanna, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye. Jane and Lennox. Jane, you're on.
Hello. Hi, Ray, and hi, Doctor.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I'm calling about my 13-year-old lab shepherd mix, whose name is Sasha. And Sasha has a host of issues. The ones concerning me the most these days is he has what possibly, my veterinarian possibly says is laryngeal paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not been looked at with a scope yet, but judging by the noises that he makes when he breathes and the fact that whenever he starts to pant for any reason at all, he sounds really kind of gurgly and, you know, it's pretty rough to listen to. So my question is, we actually had him take a course of steroids plus antihistamine to see if that would improve matters, and it did, but it didn't resolve. So the noise is still there, although on a much less pronounced level. The sad news about the steroids is that, number one, they're steroids, and number two, he really reacted pretty badly. He became quite agitated. So behaviorally, it was not fun for any of us.
Right.
so, you know, he's 13. He also has... some kind of dementia going on. Not that he's forgetting everything he ever knew, but he vocalizes a lot, and sometimes he kind of cries out for no apparent reason. And nobody, none of his vets think that he's in any pain at all. But that's part of the picture as well. So my question, we're thinking about, you know, if this does progress, whether or not he would be a candidate for surgery. His heart's fine, but he is 13. And if he's not a candidate for surgery, kind of how would we know, you know, when his quality of life is getting poor enough that, you know, that we would think about ending his life. So
right. That's
my situation.
Okay.
So for those listeners who don't know, laryngeal paralysis is something we see fairly commonly in large breed older dogs. The larynx or your voice box opens and closes when you breathe and swallow. And the nerves going to that become poorly functional. So instead of the larynx pulling open when you breathe and closing up when you swallow, it just sort of flaps in the breeze. And so dogs, as they pant, will get this very harsh breathing sound. And it can get to the point, especially in the hot summer, where they can have a lot of difficulty breathing. They can get overheated. So one word of warning I would have as we head into the summer with Sasha is to make sure that
he's a male. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sasha is one of those names, can go either way.
Yeah.
And make sure that he does not get overheated. So don't walk him in the heat of the day. If he starts breathing hard, get him inside in the air conditioning, get a fan on him. I will sometimes even use some low dose tranquilizers.
What kind of tranquilizers?
There's one common one we use called acepromazine. And it's you give a very low dose, and it's just enough so that they don't get themselves worked up about things. And I've had a lot of dogs, you know, live a fairly long time with laryngeal paralysis. There is a surgery that can be done where they partially pull open one side and basically tie it in place so that it's now stuck partially open. That's great. We had one dog that went through that, an older golden who I believe was about 13, and the people were really thrilled. We just recently had another patient go through it, and unfortunately, the sutures didn't hold. So they went through the surgery, and then it didn't end up working for them. So, you know, it's a kind of, it's always a tough call because all of the dogs that get laryngeal paralysis are older. So it's one of those, you don't know how long these guys have.
Exactly. And is it a progressive condition?
It can be. Some dogs live with it for quite a while. Some dogs get to the point where they're just collapsing and turning blue at the slightest thing. So it can be a quality of life issue for sure. So
Our wish is really to save him from being in respiratory distress.
Right. So the best thing is don't let him get overheated.
All right.
Or too worked up.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Rebecca in Kingston. Rebecca, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi, doctor. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, great. I have a about 14-year-old dog, 38 pounds, chow mix. And it's pretty chronic at this point, some wheezing that comes on intermittently. At this point now, I notice when she'll have some of these episodes, it's as though some fluid will come up, and it's, you know, I can tell that it's in her nose, and then sometimes it sort of spews out from her mouth, just small amounts. It has sweet odor, and but it seems as though it'll sting her nose. I mean, she'll sort of seem a little bit distressed, and if I've ever had to wipe it up off the floor, it's usually yellow. And the last time this did happen, though, in the middle of the night, it was a little green, which made me feel more concerned about it. And the wheezing, when the wheezing episode comes on, it can last anywhere from just even kind of a threat of it to maybe 15 seconds. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Right. Now, has your vet...
Where the fluid's coming from.
Right. Has the vet seen the dog for this issue at all?
She has not.
Okay. All right. Because, you know, the question is this something in the lungs? Is this in the sinuses? It's really hard to know. Sometimes what people think of as a wheezing attack is actually something we call reverse sneezing.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
Which is basically they're trying to clear the back of their throat. And so in that case, they almost seem like they're wheezing or choking, and they can bring up some either spit or mucus from their nose.
Mm-hmm.
And I find sometimes antihistamines will help with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably would be best to at least have her, especially at her age, get her checked out and make sure that her heart and lungs sound okay. Anytime you're seeing green or yellow, it does make me a little worried that there could be a little bit of a bacterial infection.
Yeah.
And at her age, they just don't have the immune system that a young dog does. So I would get her checked out.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Rebecca, It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop today, 1-800-348-2551. Bernadette in New Paltz, you're on.
Yeah, I have a question about, I've had cats in the past. I've usually been pretty good with them, and most of them were wild. But I've been feeding a couple cats outside of a plaza. They're very skittish. If I step outside my door, they run off, you know, and then they sneak up to the food I leave. I'm thinking, is there any way that you can make them more comfortable with you, or is there a way I can go about feeding them? And they don't have any flea collars, but they're pretty healthy. And I thought maybe at some point I might take them in, and I didn't know if you had any suggestions.
Well, I mean, it sounds like they're pretty much feral at this point. Are they adult cats, or are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, boy, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, you would probably have to trap them and then somehow get them inside into a room and then just work slowly with them to see if you can get them to be, you know, friendly. But some cats, if they have not been socialized to people by the time they're adults, it can be really tough. You know, feeding them, that's fine. I mean, a lot of people feed feral cats. And you may want to, you're in New Paltz, you may want to see if there's any kind of a trap, neuter, release type of a program down there where you could trap them and at least get them spayed and neutered so they're not going to be
propagating
all over the place.
Right.
And then, you know, potentially make sure they have some shelter in the winter.
Right.
But I think the only way you're going to make them friendly is probably by trapping them and getting them inside. I mean, you can try getting them used to seeing you, and eventually they may come close enough where you can pet them. But, you know.
Well, I doubt I could even trap them. I'm thinking what they do in Dutchess County, where they're at now, is they usually give them shots. Somehow they'll give them a shot if they can get close enough to them. And then they give them the regular shots that they need, put a collar on them, and then put them back outside again. So I think I probably couldn't even do that. So I'm thinking probably I'd have to go to them. But
okay. Well, okay. Good luck, Bernadette. We appreciate it very much. Deborah in Bethel. Deborah, you're on.
Oh, hello. Thank you.
Sure.
I got a problem with feline leukemia. How dangerous is it, really? I had a cat when I was, like, I don't know, 20 years ago, and they said, you know, feline leukemia, and they said, well, maybe not, but it spread. It didn't. I had other cats after that, and the leukemia did not spread.
All right, fair question.
So you have a cat now with feline leukemia?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, feline leukemia is a virus that spread from cat to cat. They have now discovered it really is most dangerous to young kittens and cats of less than a year of age. The older the cat gets, the more...
I had one put down because she had it.
Yeah. Well, if they have it, once they have feline leukemia, they have it for life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either going to... They're either going to be a carrier and live with it forever...
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to die from it.
Okay.
But they are now finding that adult cats are much more resistant to getting feline leukemia than we ever thought, which is good.
All right, Deborah, thanks very much. Let's get one more in here. It's Marion in Germantown. Marion, you're on. Only about a minute here.
Yes, my question is, I'm considering buying a mini dachshund, and I would like to know what tests can I expect for the puppy to have undergone when buying it.
All right.
Really, the only test they would do to the puppy would probably be a stool exam to check for worms. Now, sometimes, you know, in certain breeds, they will test the parents for certain diseases, but dachshunds, I can't think of any. They don't, you know, their hips and knees and all that are so crooked to begin with that they're not going to be worried about hip dysplasia and things like that. So mainly for a puppy, it's just making sure they've had any shots that they're of age of and that they've been checked for worms and potentially dewormed.
All right. I'm afraid that's where we will have to leave it. Thanks, Marion, and thank you to everybody who called in. Thank you to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. We'll see you during the fun drive next week.
Yep, I'll be here.
All right. Support comes from United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, New York. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer, UnitedWayGCR.org. Snow Farm Summer, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, the New England Craft Program for high school students, glass blowing, ceramics, digital arts, and much more. 2 or 4 week sessions, small group instruction, snowfarm.org. MySci, Museum of Innovation and Science, presenting Grossology, the Science of the Human Body, interactive games, larger than life exhibits, and hands on activities, now open, MISCI.org. And Woodstock Day School, an accredited independent school dedicated to providing academic, socially, and environmentally mindful education from nursery school through grade 12. No such thing as an average student. WoodstockDayschool.org. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls, Colleen O'Connell, who answered the phones, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's The Gardening Show.